Welcome to the 29th episode of Season 6 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday, the 11th of September, and in this episode, we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also talk about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening or watching live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Alan.
Just little old me.
Oh, is it just you? Just
me.
To the others.
Yes. So Tony and Laura were busy this week, so unfortunately they couldn't make the show. And Tony sent us a giant email telling us exactly how to podcast. And
does this mean it'll be better than last time we did it?
I hope so. Yes. Okay. That's the theory, anyway. There's lots of cables strewn all over the place, and we'll kind of have to see how it goes. Really,
we're doing it remotely, which is a change.
Yes, and there's a lot. Because there's only two of us, there's a lot more that we have to fiddle with.
Yes. That does mean that if you're watching in the Google Hangout, if you're watching the video in the Google Hangout, you won't be able to hear the jingles this week.
Yeah.
So if you value jingles over our faces, then you'll want to listen to the audio-only stream.
Or you could listen to the audio and have the video, but have them out of sync completely.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
That's a weird experience. So, yes. Shall we...
Right.
Shall we do this?
Let's do it.
It's time for the news, and the first news article, which has been passed around quite a bit now, is all your Nokia are now belong to Microsoft. Nokia's handset division has been sold off to Microsoft, and in the 10-year deal, it allows Microsoft to use the Nokia name, while Nokia are prevented from making smartphones until 2015.
So this was... I suppose it's not, you know, the most unexpected thing in the world.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly what I expected to happen at the same time. I suppose it means that they've...
Did you expect
no
a full-on buyout?
No, I just... I don't know. I suppose it's a sort of consequence of the fact that no one else has started making Microsoft phones. They thought that they might as well just go wholesale and do it.
Well, I think
there are
other manufacturers who make Windows 8 phones.
Are they?
Oh. Not a lot.
Oh, no, I suppose HTC tend to do a bit of everything, don't they?
Yeah.
And there's, but Nokia are the big flagship manufacturer.
Exactly. I'm interested. I realise, you know, everyone's thinking this is sounding the death knell for Nokia, but in some ways I quite like the deal they've struck. Firstly, they're going to get rid of Stephen Elop because he'll move over to Microsoft. So that's a good thing. You know, I'm a kind of glass half full kind of guy. So that's a good thing. And the fact that Nokia will be allowed to make smartphones from 2015 means they've got plenty of time to ramp up to make that happen.
Yeah, assuming that there's still enough of them left to do that. I suppose because at the moment now they are... mostly just seem to be a technology licensing company. That must be where they're getting their money from, licensing of Qt and licensing of...
Qt went off to Digia now. So that was also a bit of good news. So Qt's okay.
Yeah, and I suppose... And part of this deal, as well as selling the device manufacturing, they're licensing their patents to Microsoft.
Yeah, which is good because it means... as I understand it, Microsoft don't have the full use of them, so they can't use them in trolling other people or, you know, in the evil ways. They can use them in order to create technologies that use, you know, what's...
But that means that Nokia still owns the patents and still gets money from the licensing of the patents, so they're not just a skeleton.
Yes. So I'm part of me hopes that, Microsoft will continue to make Windows 8 phones so that we've got something to compare to, and everyone else will just not make Windows 8 phones. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. And next in the news, SUSE have offloaded maintenance and support of LibreOffice UK to UK-based Calabra.
From SUSE to Calabra. Calabra being, I think they're UK-based but have people all around the place.
Right.
And so they're doing...
So they're performing commercial support services. So if you want a supported deployment of LibreOffice in your organization, then you can buy it from them.
That's great. That's great to have someone, you know, taking up that responsibility, because I guess the staff move over as well from Sousa to Calabra. So,
right.
Yeah, that's good for Calabra, good for LibreOffice. Yeah, all around.
Yes, hopefully good for adoption as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, one of the things that keeps people with Microsoft Office is that you buy, you get a supported Office suite, which if you just download LibreOffice and deploy it in your organization, you don't necessarily get. So it's good to be able to say, this company will provide support if you want to pay them.
Absolutely. Cool. In an update posted to the Debian user list, there's been some discussion sparked as the CPU microcode that it contains will disable overclocking unless the user has a modern supported motherboard.
So what's microcode?
So some of the features of modern CPUs are done via code that's run on the CPU but isn't the code that you've written. So it's
right, so a sort embedded. Of like firmware.
Yeah, kind of like firmware. Periodically that, like any software, has bugs in it. And
right.
Rather than send out a whole load of new chips when the bug is found...
yeah, that might be a bit expensive.
Yeah, it's slightly impractical. what they do is they ship software updates, and those software updates, those microcode updates, we ship on Linux and other platforms ship them as well. On Linux, they come in Debian and Ubuntu, they come in a deb package, and they get loaded up when you boot your machine, so your CPU has the latest stuff, bug fixes and whatever. But it seems that the latest update doesn't just fix stuff; it also potentially breaks stuff as well.
Right? Is it breaking it as in this is a regression, or is it breaking it as in order to fix the problem? It has to disable these features in some cases.
I'm not sure. I couldn't quite fathom that.
Honest, losing overclocking isn't the end of the world for most people. I'd rather not have overclocking and have everything else work than lose overclocking.
Yeah, if it meant that my accounts weren't right, but hey, I could do my accounts at 4 gigahertz, then I would probably have, and the tax man would appreciate accurate accounts rather than hey look, I got your accounts in.
If I was into overclocking, I would have a modern supported motherboard. I wouldn't be using just sort of
I don't know,
I got from PC World.
I'm not sure. I think a lot of the overclocking community are some of them are the Gen 2 style fun roll loops, go faster stripes type, who want to make the thing go absolutely fastest as possible. And so they're probably going to have, super fast CPUs and, the absolute best RAM you can buy with giant heatsinks and so on. But also there's, there's people who want to just make their hardware that they've already bought continue to work and work with modern software that requires more resources. So, I've personally experienced this myself. I had a desktop that had a Core 2 Duo CPU, and I wanted to crank a few more cycles out of it, so I overclocked it slightly in the BIOS. I was lucky that the BIOS was very easy, and there was just a little slider. And
mine's like that as well. You just open it up and say, "Oh, I'd like to overclock my CPU by this much, please."
Yeah. And some of the newer BIOSes are even more funky. Greg Krah-Hartman, one of the kernel developers, posted a screenshot or photo of the very latest Intel BIOS on a machine that he'd been given by Intel to do some, I don't know, driver work on or something. And
more on that story later.
It looked like a desktop OS. It didn't look like a BIOS.
Mine's got a full on like a cursor GUI, which I control with the mouse, and a proper GUI.
Yeah,
it's wow, crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah, it looks great. And when you think, probably only ever going to see that two or three times in the life of the PC.
Yeah, and they put all that effort into it.
At the point when you install it and overclock it and then, wipe all the settings when you sell it or whatever.
Yeah.
yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Cool.
What's next?
Crowdfunding campaign MailPile, which we spoke about before, has just finished and received over $163,000. Some way over their $100,000 target.
Oh, wow, that's good.
So this is a webmail solution which is designed to basically integrate PGP encryption
into and signing into the general workflow of mail users, making it really easy for people to move away from things like Gmail and Hotmail.
Is that so? It's not like I could use Thunderbird with a plugin. Job done. Yeah. Bam. I've solved that problem. Is that can but I have $163,000, please?
But this is webmail.
Okay.
So it means is that harder. That sorry.
Is that harder? Why? Why?
Well,
why?
It means that it's online. It means that you can have it set up and you can, running on a server or provided by a provider, and you can access it through your browser from anywhere rather than having to, every machine which you want to use email on having to set up Thunderbird and Enigmail and get your keys on there and everything.
Right. And this has never been solved before. We've not got, I know we've got Roundcube email and we've got Courier IMAP and, we've got PGP and we've got all the GPG and we've got all these bits.
Yeah, we've got all the bits.
Put together.
Yeah, but I think the idea with the MailPile guys was that it's never all been put together with a cohesive user interface, which makes using PGP a good user experience. So, Gmail is generally heralded as, the best webmail interface with its labeling and its threading of conversations.
And adverts.
But there's not a solution which you can deploy yourself that's got those sort of features and has encryption.
Right. Okay. So is this targeting, normal people who are seeing controversy around Prism and NSA and their snooping activities and thinking, I'd like my email to be more secure? Is it aimed at, my mum?
I think that's the idea.
Aimed at ISPs or...?
Well, I think it's aimed at at the moment it's just a client, so it's aimed at people who might want to run a webmail service, perhaps, or people who'd want to run their own webmail client to connect to an existing hosted email server somewhere,
right?
But have the end-to-end encryption, so the people who are hosting their server, even if they were required to give their emails to a government agency, that those emails would be encrypted.
Okay. So they've got something like, they posted an update on their Indiegogo campaign. They've got something like 20 people in their team.
Well, that's really good, because there were three of them that launched the campaign.
Right.
So if they've got a big team working on it, that sounds like
it does. It sounds great. But, we've heard about these campaigns before where you raise a bunch of money and then 20 people, that's actually quite a lot of people.
It's a lot of people to manage. I mean, I'm guessing that these, $163,000 isn't enough to employ 20 people for very long. So I'm guessing that a lot of these are going to be sort of community contributors rather than full-time staff.
Right. Okay. Well, good luck to them.
I mean, it's certainly bigger than a lot of open source projects. So,
we should talk more about these replacements for things like Gmail.
Yes, maybe we should talk about them in the next show.
Yes, let's do that. There was also some other company released some software recently, something called Android.
Never heard of it.
It's a new version, 4.4, codenamed Keyline Pie. No?
No.
Oh.
Guess again.
KitKat, apparently.
KitKat, everyone's favourite chocolate biscuit.
Well, probably. It was a bit bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is. So they've got this logo, which is the Android as a four-finger KitKat. And KitKat's website did a tie-in with the same sort of... They have this sort of big scrolling down CSS3 presentation thing, and KitKat did a similar one, sort of spoofing the Android marketing spiel.
It was very well done.
It was very well done, just all a bit bizarre. And now they're doing some sort of cross promotion where you can win Google Play credit from KitKat bars. And
right. So basically, we've released some software. Go and buy some chocolate.
Because the sort of code naming scheme, like Ubuntu is always adjective animal. With Android, it's always some sort of
dessert,
sweet confectionery dessert thing. And this is the first time that rather than just being a generic thing, they've decided to go with a brand name. So I don't know if we're going to see Mars Bar or
what's next? L Twink. Lion. It'll be Lion Bar, wouldn't it? Lion. Well, they can't have Lion, really, because OS X had Lion. So
right, yes, well,
yeah.
Do we know anything else about about version 4.4 other than that it's going
to
be
an article on Ars Technica where they were talking about the focus that they're trying to have on, you know, not necessarily adding loads of new features now, but, you know, just focusing on finishing everything, polishing everything, and less on carriers adding their own value add, you know.
Right, because they've have they jumped to version number?
No, 4.3 to 4.4, I think.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, because,
Missed out the infinite numbers between 4.3 and 4.4, of course.
Right, yeah, that must be... No, it's because Jelly Bean has been the code name for several releases. It was 4.2 and 4.3.
Oh, right.
And now 4.4 has a new name, I think. I think that's right. Anyway, I lose track.
Yes, me too. What's next?
Network World have published a review of server operating systems and found that Ubuntu came out on top, much to their surprise. They're expecting it to be Red Hat.
Much to their surprise, really? Did they think it was really terrible? Or?
Well, no, they just expected Red Hat as the long-standing, big, popular commercial. You know, everyone thinks of them when they think of Enterprise Linux.
Yeah.
Because they call it Red Hat Enterprise Linux. That Ubuntu, which is, you know, that desktop distribution that, you know, used by the community, is actually the better enterprise server operating system.
I like this quote. Ubuntu delivered intuitive, uncluttered management tools, excellent hypervisor support, and transparency.
Wow. Yes. Oh, yeah, because, yeah, the commercial and open source versions are one and the same, because, yeah, with Red Hat, you pay for Red Hat or the community versions of Fedora or CentOS, a recompile or like CentOS, right, or Whitebox, whereas Ubuntu is just Ubuntu.
Right. Oh, well, that's nice to see.
That's quite impressive.
Nice to get some positive news about Ubuntu now and then.
there's one
final item. Linus Torvalds has said something, which is apparently funny.
A change.org petition.
Ah, that was it. Yes.
Yes.
So someone Linus to change something in the Linux kernel because he considered it to be insecure.
Right, this is something to do with the random number generation, which is important.
Yes,
for encryption.
And they thought it was had been interfered with by key players in NSA or similar organizations. And Linus replied, "No, basically."
Right,
it's quite funny, worth a read. Linus,
we'll
doing
put the link in the show
stuff.
Notes. Cool. Right, and that's all the news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that entertains, engages, or enrages you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message, just to know there's someone out there who cares.
And now
it's time for the community news and events. And first up, there is an interesting thread on the Ubuntu phone mailing list about catching long-running processes. That does sound interesting.
Well, you know, there's for a long time been discussions on other mobile platforms about, you know, how do you go about killing applications? How do I get the maximum out of my battery and... make sure that there aren't any rogue processes killing, you know, eating the CPU and killing my battery.
Right.
I probably shouldn't use such emotive terms, you know, consuming my CPU and exhausting my battery. But we've got to think about the same kind of things in Ubuntu, because it's a lot more apparent with a portable device than it ever was with a desktop or laptop. You've got, you know, a low power CPU and a small battery, you want to be able to get the most out of it. So there's lots of discussion, I found it pretty interesting about how you detect long running processes. You know, what about some long running process that's doing some processing on photos, or for example, if you wanted to, you know, turn all your video to sepia or something like that, would that be detected by the system as a rogue process, and then it would just go and kill that process, or, you know, demote it or something? So. It's an interesting discussion.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There's lots of, you know, potential cases where, you know, you could kill the wrong thing or not kill the right thing.
Yes. And next up, 64-bit images are now being proposed as recommended. So when you go to download Ubuntu, it says, we recommend you get the 64-bit image, whereas before it's always said the 32-bit image, oh, but you might want the 64-bit image instead.
Yeah, we've had a lot of flack for that. There was a bug filed, lots of discussion, you know, everywhere on mailing lists. For a number of releases, people have moaned that we've recommended the 32-bit version rather than the 64-bit version. And yeah, now we're switching and it's going to be 64-bit recommended.
Cool. And I suppose, and it said in the announcement that, or in the proposal rather, that, you know, individual flavors would be, it'll be up to them to decide what they recommend. So for instance, Xubuntu, which is, well, no, we've said before, it's not necessarily designed to run on server hardware. Okay, so something, a light desktop version like Lubuntu,
right?
It might be designed for older hardware, so they might say they recommend 32-bit rather than 64-bit, and it doesn't mean that just because the main Ubuntu distribution is saying 64-bit is the way they recommend that everyone else has to.
Absolutely.
Because I guess the main concern would be, what if someone's running it on an older system, in which case they might be more likely to be using a different flavor anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good news. Good news all around.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Stefan Graeber has blogged and posted on the mailing list about a change to the images for the Ubuntu Touch devices. It's a bit technical, but the upshot of it is that the images, if you flash a phone like a Nexus 4 or a Nexus 7 or a Nexus 10, previously you were basically just flashing an Ubuntu file system, much like you would install an Ubuntu system on a desktop or a laptop. So you could SSH into it, or you could connect over the USB cable, and then you could start apt-get update and you know, update the system and monkey around with files on the file system, just like you could on the desktop.
Right.
But with this read-only image, it's slightly different. You're getting what is effectively a file, and in that file is your Ubuntu system, and it's mounted read-only. So the system boots up in pretty much completely read-only mode, except for a few directories that need to be read-write, like your home directory and temp and stuff like that. With the goal being that we'll then be able to send over-the-air updates, and it won't be apt-get update, apt-get, you know, just upgrade. There'll be diffs between the previous image that you have on your system and the next image. It's pretty cool.
So, interesting. And I mean, I might have been reading this completely wrong, but does this mean now that when you update, if you update an Ubuntu phone, that it's not going to blow away everything? It's just going to update the root, essentially the root partition, and not your home partition?
Yeah, well, the tools that we use, it didn't blow that away anyway. You had to specifically add a dash dash wipe or dash dash no backup or something like that. So we already had that. But this is doing it in a slightly different way. But yes, the ultimate result is your own user data won't be touched because it's on a different partition. And the system is all read-only. So there's lots of benefits to it, like doing updates over the air, is this helps towards that. Yeah, there's other benefits, but they're all in that blog post and mailing list post, so I'd go and read that.
Okay. And there's been a blog post about Health Check, which is a tool for diagnosing various elements of resource usage.
Yeah, this is from Colin King, I think, who works on the kernel team at Canonical, and he's very good at analysing power usage and current draw on devices. He's had laptops in bits and got a very expensive analyzer to probe all the different bits of the computer, rather than just have anecdotal evidence of, you know, when I turn off USB suspend, I gain a few minutes. He wanted to show scientifically that, you know, when you turn off this bit, or when you turn on this option, or when you compile the kernel with this option or that option, how you can, you know, gain or lose. And he's been writing tools that help you diagnose where you...
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really good. He does some really good stuff.
Excellent.
The next one is a URL, and I can't remember what on earth. That was it. Some guy called Sam posted on the Unity Design mailing list saying, "Oh, hi, my name's Sam. Been writing music for some time, and he likes Ubuntu, and he'd like to contribute to the startup sounds that you hear. You know, the bongo drums that, we've had for a very long time."
Yes.
Well, it turns out this guy is not just, you know, any old dude. He actually has some experience. He he's most known for his work on the Mass Effect video game trilogy.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so he's like, you know, a professional guy, you know. So who is it, the guy who did the Windows startup sound? Is it Brian Eno, I think, did
one. I'll take your word for it that it is.
I'm pretty sure Brian Eno did the boom, bring, that one.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I think. Someone will write in and email us, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org, if I'm wrong, which I probably am. But, yeah, it's nice to get, you know, mainstream professionals, music professionals, who want to help us out. And the first response he got on the mailing list wasn't, "Oh, great, that'd be really cool." First response he got was, "I don't want to be rude, but, you know, can you prove who you are?" So he tweeted a little tweet that just says, "At Ubuntu, I love you guys." So, yeah, that was validation enough, I think.
Cool. And as part of Ubuntu On Air, members of the Canonical Design Team are going to spend time giving advice to app developers. So what's Ubuntu On Air again?
So Ubuntu On Air was an idea we had probably about 18 months ago, 2 years maybe, where we would use Google Hangouts On Air.
Well, they've been going for 2 years.
I don't know. It might be just 1 year. I can't remember. I registered the domain ubuntuonair.com.
Right.
We discussed this at a UDS. Must have been over a year ago. And I registered the domain, and we pointed it at a WordPress instance, and then we just embedded the Hangout video. And the goal was that we would have regular Hangouts in order to show and tell or discuss stuff, or get people involved and get the word out about what we're doing in Canonical, but also just in the wider Ubuntu community. And Jono does his weekly video Q&A, which I think goes on around about an hour ago as we put this out. And so we decided to get the design team on one of the Hangouts, and they came up with the idea of asking developers who are creating apps for Ubuntu Touch to submit screenshots or sketches or designs to the design team, and they'll review them and critique them and give them suggestions for how they can be improved or look more consistent with the rest of the design of Ubuntu Touch. And we had the first one today.
Excellent. How did it go?
Yeah, it's pretty good. We had we only had 1 day's notice, because we kind of decided to do this quite late and picked a slot today to do it. And so, but two people sent their app in, and we went through some of the design with Katie and Rosie from the design team in London. And it was really good. And we've had some feedback from those developers saying, "Thanks very much. And I'll work on that. And where can I find out more?" And all that kind of stuff. So it's, it's working out well.
Excellent.
What's next? The Click App Store is now open.
Yeah, what's that?
So we're replacing Debs with Click packages for applications that install on Ubuntu Touch.
Right.
And there's lots of reasons. We've talked about it in the past.
They're sort of like self-contained packages basically it's mainly going to be QML and assets. So there's not a lot for a deb to do.
Yes. And also it's a lot faster, leaner, and we're automating the process of reviewing. At the moment, there's still a human reviewing the apps that go into the store. It will be pretty much fully automated.
Is that safe?
That's interesting as well.
Reviewing can you automate?
So you can certainly analyze the code and see what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
And given that all the apps are going to be siloed, they're going to be constrained with AppArmor, so they can't break out of that AppArmor constraint.
Oh, okay, that's clever.
The developer has to come up with a manifest file that says what the application is going to do, whether it needs network access, file access, and that kind of stuff. At the moment, it's only for open, free applications. In the future, we'll add paid apps as well. But at the moment, it's just for for free apps. People have started submitting apps already, and it's great. We've got a review. We've got a website that we go through, and we download the Click package, and we try them out, and give feedback. You know, if something's icon's broken or the app, you know, just doesn't work or something, then we bounce it back, and they submit it again, and it's working pretty well.
Cool. Probably shouldn't have left this one till last because we don't have a lot of time to discuss it.
Yeah. I think it's been discussed at length elsewhere, really. But yeah. Go on.
Intel has reverted some patches providing Exmir support in its open source graphics drivers, stating that it does not condone Canonical's course of action and therefore isn't willing to support its patches upstream.
Yeah, it's been a lot of discussion about this. The Exmir patches to the Intel Xorg driver were accepted by Chris Wilson, who's the maintainer, and Chris works for Intel. And so he accepted them as the maintainer for the driver. And, you know, we kind of celebrated and said, yay, look at that, we've got it in. And then when Chris went to do a release, he reverted that change and put a kind of sarcastic comment in there that said, you know, it's been reverted by the management. Kind of implying that perhaps, depends how you interpret it, maybe Chris doesn't agree with it, or maybe Chris is just saying that I was overruled. I don't know.
But
it's still rumbling on, but the fact of the matter is it just means that we end up maintaining that ourselves.
And so it doesn't mean that Intel won't be supported on Ubuntu. Intel won't be supporting it themselves.
If you wanted to run Exmir on another distro, it would be harder. You know, it's kind of frustrating, but you know, we'll just keep plugging away. And
I thought the language, you know, they don't condone Canonical's course of action was pretty weird. I mean, since when did you have to condone someone's course of action to accept some code which let you support stuff?
I'm not quite sure what that's about. I mean, it could well be a reference to the historical conversations that have gone on about Mir and Wayland and, you know, the brouhaha that happened previously. I don't know.
Anyway. Right, and we've also got some events to mention.
The first
Ubuntu
one is
Global
the...
Jam.
Sorry.
Do you want to do it or shall I?
Yeah, go on then.
The Ubuntu Global Jam is happening on the 13th to 15th of September. So if you're listening live, or if you're listening just as this show has been released, that's this weekend.
Yes, if you're not listening live, then it's September the 13th and 15th to 15th.
Right.
And we'll put a link in the show notes.
Cool.
On Friday, 27th of September, is the Revolution Conference held in Shrewsbury, Shropshire. And they're on their fourth one and having a cracking lineup, including Jonathan Snook, Elliot J. Stocks, Laura Kalvag, and David Vaughan. What's all that about?
Cool.
I have no idea.
I don't know, but you can go to 2013.shropgeek-revolution.co.uk to find out more.
Wise.
And finally, there's this little old event called Odd Camp.
Yay.
Which is coming up on the 19th and 20th of October.
That's coming on fast, isn't it?
It is coming up, like, not many weeks left. Not many tickets left either.
Really?
So get your tickets. Yeah, they are going like the proverbial hotcakes. We've now confirmed most of the scheduled speakers. So we've got Barney Brown, who we've interviewed on the show before. He's going to be talking about Intercontinental Music Lab.
Ah, excellent.
Freaky Clown, who's spoken at Odd Camp before. He did a brilliant talk about image forensics in Farnham, and he's going to be doing a talk about security. The Open Rights Group are going to be talking about internet filtering, and Gary Smales is going to be talking about open book publishing.
Oh, interesting. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so, yeah. There's a bit more information on the website about those talks. And, of course, you're also more than encouraged to give a talk because it is an unconference. And if you're interested in giving a talk and you want to know a bit more about what you need to do, there's a page on the website called Talk Guidelines where you can see, you know, how long your talk should be, what sort of stuff you should put in it. Do you need slides? What equipment do you need? How do you submit your talk? That sort of thing.
Cool.
So go check that out on the website.
Excellent. Yes. Ogcamp.org.
Cool.
That's all the events.
And that's all for this episode. Join us next time when we'll be discussing going off-grid, reading your feedback, and making your life a little bit easier, perhaps, with some command line love.
Excellent. So if you're on the live stream, stay tuned for the next episode. If not, wait till next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. See you. Bye.